Drupal Voices is a series of interviews with people contributing to the Drupal community. Brought to you by Lullabot Consulting. Whether you need technical architecture, developer support, optimization and analysis, on-site training, or just general guidance for your Drupal project, Lullabot has led many of the largest Drupal projects in the world. Visit lullabot.com or call 877-LULLABOT to find out how we can help you with your next project.
My name's Larry Garfield. You may know me from such projects as the database layer and the registry. Oh my god. So one of the big things that I'm working on for Drupal 8 is this project called Butler. It kind of kicked off in San Francisco a year ago, and it's been moving slowly because we're still trying to plan and get people on board. And it's evolved a bit. At this point, kind of the core of Butler is right now Drupal has this problem with context, that is information about the request that's coming in. We have arg. We have menu load object. We have the global language variable. We have the context and spaces modules. We have panels. All of these handle request information in a very different way, and it's very inconsistent, and most of them are incompatible with each other, and it's just a complete mess. And we really cannot do anything to handle web services cleanly, or more robust display logic, or more robust plugin logic until we get that problem cleaned up, until we have a single core system for handling all of this extra data we need to pass around within Drupal. And the way we're approaching that at this point is an object-oriented circle to be called a broker pattern, I believe, or a mediator, that you don't ask for, you know, a current argument. You don't ask for a menu load object to get a node. You ask this central repository, the central broker system, what is the active node? What is the active organic group? What is the active language? And it doesn't know, but it then goes and finds out from somewhere else that is configurable and pluggable. And that separates context figuring out from context using. And that makes it easy to centralize that information and then not load stuff we don't need, to easily extend it so if we need to carry more data around, we can. And you know, that then gives us more metadata to work with. So you know, grand vision for the future is, you know, request comes in, based on that context information, we can decide, are we showing a page, load up the page handling system, or are we returning a JSON object? If so, skip 90% of the Drupal, run node load, Drupal to JSON, done. And in order to do that, we have to first fix that core pipeline for information. And kind of step one for Butler.
I see. And so in Dries' keynote today, he had listed context as one of the major initiatives for Drupal 8. So, you know, why is this context so important, and what is that going to then enable for, like, ordinary, you know, websites that would be running Drupal 8?
I would say that in order to make Drupal smarter, we have to have a way for it to get that knowledge. I know that's, you know, kind of hand-wavy, but that's kind of level we're working at the moment. And, you know, applied example, if you have a block and you want to show information from the node that's currently being displayed, how do you get that node? Right now, the answer is you kind of hack at it, and that's not a good answer. If we instead have a clean mechanism for getting that information to that block, then we also have a clean method for changing that information for that block. So you could have, here's a good example, a site that we built in Drupal 6, at Palantir, built for a client in Drupal 6, had essentially two pages next to each other on one display that changed independently. Sometimes one was random, the other was what you clicked on. Other times one was cached, and the other was some other page. Maybe they were related. And we had to do some thoroughly evil things, although we didn't hack core, to make that work. In kind of a Butler world, if I can use that phrase, that would simply be two different node displays that we pass different context information to, one with one node, one with the other node, or swap out which display gets used on each side. And that makes that a lot cleaner and more consistent. It also means if we can centralize that information, we can also cache it very effectively. So imagine a site where, you know, if you log in, most of the page is identical for everyone, but there's one block on the side that shows hello, Krell, hello, whatever your name is, here's your daily specials. Everything else on the page is the same for everyone. Right now, to do that, we have to rebuild the entire page. And that is enormously wasteful. If instead we know, you know, every chunk on the page depends on certain pieces of context, like what's the current node, what's the current user, you know, what's the current organic group, what's the current language, and stuff like that, then we can say, oh, this block here doesn't care what the current user is, so if that's the only thing that's changing, cache it, don't bother re-rendering it. And we can have a page where, for an authenticated user, we're re-rendering exactly one block on every page, and that's it. And everything else is just pulled out of the cache. That cache could be in Drupal, the cache could be in Varnish. That's an enormous performance win, because we're bypassing two-thirds of the process. And if there's no form in that block, just by chance, then there's no reason we should even load the form system. We should be able to not load these things until we need them. And that further cuts down on just the amount of code we load in Drupal. That makes Drupal a lot faster, even for shared hosting sites.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of like a tricky thing to exactly calculate in terms of, like, you're putting a broker in there and you would assume that it's going to have some sort of overhead of communication of, you know, going back and forth. But at the same time, you're sort of cutting out a lot of things that may be slowing it down. So, you know, since Driesta in his keynote talked about performance as being like one of the number one gates for, is this functionality going to like make this slight slower? I mean, how do you foresee, you know, measuring this type of drastic change to all of Drupal to figure out whether or not it's a performance hit?
That's going to be hard. I won't lie. I agree with Dries completely that we need to make performance a top priority for Drupal 8. And benchmarks certainly help there. And we need to benchmark early and often. At the same time, though, we also need to take a more thoughtful look at it and say, okay, conceptually, is this a fast algorithm or a slow algorithm? Is it a fast algorithm at, you know, a small scale or a big scale? And, you know, look at that. Okay, yes, context, you know, a context broker adds overhead. What does that overhead buy us in terms of flexibility, in terms of the ability to lazy load code, in terms of the ability to not have to regenerate things? I think in the long run, it will be a net win. But in the short term, there may be a small performance hit for it. My hope is that it's not too large and that we can kind of do those in parallel. So, you know, as we implement the context system in the first place, we can then start converting things over to use that, and at the same time, start converting systems to be more pluggable and swappable based on that context. And once those are pluggable and swappable, we can make those lazy load. So, for example, if the form processing logic in form.inc was something that didn't get loaded until we need it, we know that's going to be a benefit. So we can just build that in. We don't necessarily know how much of a benefit, but we do know that it's going to save code. If we can reduce the bootstrap time, that's something we know is going to help. So measure twice, cut once on our architecture, which we've been very bad at in the past. We just go for the shiny. And that's an area where we do need to look outside of Drupal as well. Look at academic analysis of algorithms. We can't obviously do a big O notation analysis of everything in Drupal, but asking ourselves, is this operation going to be an O(n) operation? Is it going to scale exponentially as you add nodes to the system, as you add blocks to the system? Look at those kind of questions. Case in point, I like to beat up on the render API because it's based on recursion and big arrays and modifying big arrays. And those are things that Drupal actually does slowly. And it does it using call user func array, which is one of the slower ways to call something in Drupal. So we should look at that type of system and say, okay, not just can we tweak it, but is this architecturally a good approach? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but we do need to take that step back and say, on the conceptual level, is this going to be fast or slow? And on the architectural level, is this going to save us something here for what it costs here? And look at those trade-offs at a 10,000-foot level, not just at a 100-foot level.
I see. Dries also sort of, in his presentation, talked a lot about mobile and mobile devices and, is this context system play into being able to sniff the user agent and then being able to sort of swap between many different, ways of displaying the information depending on what device is calling it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The type of browser we're looking at is part of the context. And not necessarily type of browser, but type of use case. So for example, the mobile app for DrupalCon that we built at Palantir, we're downloading data from the website in JSON form. All of those requests to the website, because it's in Drupal 6, are loading the entire form system and theme system. There's no use for that at all. We're not using either one of those, but that's still a ton of code we're loading just to get back a JSON dump of a query. If we can tell, we don't want to say, we're getting requests from a mobile device, so we don't load the system, but we're getting requests for JSON data because the HTTP headers tell us we want JSON data, then we don't need the theme system, just return that. And that gives us a performance win. If we want to load just part of a page, either if we're doing ESI, edge side includes for Varnish, or an AHA callback, we don't need to load the entire system, we don't need to render the entire system, we just render one part of it. It's not designing a mobile version of Drupal, it's designing Drupal to only use what it needs, and then if mobile needs less, it uses less. If an AHA callback needs less, it uses less, and we get a benefit to both of those at the same time. That makes Drupal conceptually leaner and meaner, and everything benefits from that, mobile included.
Yeah, and it seems like this process is going to be a big involved process, and almost like this is touching every part of Drupal in some ways. And so, how do you see this playing out with both the new integration of Git, but also you're going to be talking about this here at DrupalCon and sort of brainstorming now. So, what do you see how this is going to evolve?
It is big, and I have a problem thinking small, but what we've mapped out in the past year for the Butler project since we kicked it off in San Francisco is a phased approach where step one is to have this context broker system that we can put into Drupal 8 core as well as Drupal 7 contrib and start using that. Right there we get a benefit. Then from that, build a really good robust plugin mechanism for core. It may look a lot like CTools plugins, it may not. It may look a lot like Xen Frameworks plugins, it may not, I don't know yet. But get that into core, and that's something that is a big win for all systems. I mean, if we stop there, then we could still rewrite 2/3 of Drupal just around that model and get enormous benefit. Then we can move on to rewriting the page rendering system so that it's like services becomes not in core per se, but it's just kind of an implication of the way the system works that you get that functionality. But it's possible that some of that will have to wait until Drupal 9. We don't know how long Drupal 8's development cycle is going to be yet, so it's hard to plan that. So that kind of phased approach will get us some more incremental wins and let us test some of our assumptions. I mean, if we find out that the context broker we're looking at architecturally is 8 times slower than calling a function instead of 3 times slower, then we probably need to pause and rethink it then before we do too much damage. If we find it's only 3 times slower, but we know it's going to get us 8 times improvement somewhere else, that's a good trade-off. Doing it that way in phases with separable parts is the only way to do something of that size, really.
Great, yeah. It definitely seems like it's a huge thing. And finally, how do you see Git being able to sort of play into like changing the development workflow and how this is going to facilitate or make something like this more possible?
Where Git really excels for this sort of process is when you have multiple developers working on something. So if we had, as an example off the top of my head, like the core Butler mediator object, and then lots of people writing different plugins for it, and saying, okay, here's one context plugin, and here's using it somewhere, and here's a different one, use that somewhere, have different people working on all of these, then have one person or a small group that can just bring that back together and review it kind of off on the side, and build kind of like a Butler fork of Drupal that we can test out and work through the kinks without breaking everyone else, and then present that to Dries and say, okay, here's 800 commits that 8 different people have gone through in the past 2 months, and the system is now ready for core. He can then merge that whole thing in, and we haven't interrupted anyone else's workflow. And that actually makes it, even if it's just one person, that makes it a lot easier to maintain. For example, the original database patch for Drupal 7 was maintained in a third-party Subversion repository, which was manually sunk between Subversion and CVS, and I didn't actually know how to do that, so we had Checks doing it for us instead, because I didn't know how to roll patches out of that system. Systems that size are easier to do with Git's branching and merging capabilities. And It also makes it easier for multiple people to get involved because they don't have to just post revised patches. They can offer up new commit objects that, you know, one of these initiative maintainers or lieutenants can bring in and kind of, you know, create this leveled approach so that Dries doesn't have to look at every line of code. He can look at the system in toto and merge that in. And that can be happening in parallel with someone else doing, you know, gut rewrites of Drupal around HTML5, which is something else that I fully support. You know, those can happen in parallel in separate branches and separate repositories and still merge back together cleanly without breaking each other every time someone runs a CVS up. So I'm very excited about the fact that we have a Git now, because that'll make it easier to do these big initiatives without screwing everybody over.
Okay, well, great. Thanks.
Thank you.